Paul Mavrogeorge of LinkCare presented a workshop at a recent European member care conference in southern France. He talked about some of the stages we can go through in our lives that lead us to some of these dependencies or perhaps addictions. I'm sorry I can't show you the PowerPoint presentation that went along with what Paul had to say, but I think you can learn a lot just by listening. So let's slip into the back of the conference center and listen in on what Paul is saying.
I'm going to go through each of our stages here and break down more descriptive of what we're talking about in each of these areas. So with the ongoing susceptibilities, a lot of these things come from things like child abuse, sexual, physical, emotional abuse. These are scars that are present in the individual. They're growing, they're making lots of other changes, but those are wounds that are still there. Sometimes that can be an emotionally rigid or detached family. And we need to think of that in cultural terms too. That wouldn't just be a Western view of rigid, because I know folks who grew up in good German homes where would look at it in the West and say, oh, wow, it's rigid, but it wasn't. There's lots of love. There's lots of care. There's lots of compassion. Rigid is there's no room for any mistake. There's a lot of excessive legalism. And how I usually define it is really who has to be perfect are the kids. That mom and dad can have all their defects and all their things that go on, but the kids can't. So who has to be perfect with their emotions or perfect with their behaviors of the children? That I can't break rules, but you can because you're the parent. So again, it's that kind of an environment or a detached family. Each culture is going to have their own definition of that. It's really in that culture what's going to be appropriate for a relational and connection. A development of shame-based thinking throughout childhood. Now, shame-based thinking technically is probably a more Western concept, but really what that is, the biblical frame of reference that I use for that, Peter felt guilt. Okay, Peter betrayed Christ. The rooster crowed three times and his face fell. I mean, he knew what he had done, but ultimately his guilt drove him back towards relationship. He came back towards Christ. He didn't go off into isolation. Judas felt shame. He went away from relationship. He took himself out and apart, and he went out to where death was, to the heap of death and garbage. That's where he went. So he went away from relationship. He believed he was beyond redemption, that there was no hope for him, because both of them betrayed him. I mean, I know just my kind of naive human sense, I would have felt more hurt by Peter betraying me than I would from Judas, because Peter and Jesus had a relationship. They were connected. It meant more. Judas was the bookkeeper. I mean, he knew. He was kind of off doing his own thing. He was always kind of on the fringe, and Jesus knew. So when we start thinking about that, Christ's grace is so amazing. What happens with shame is I'm beyond the ability to receive grace. I'm beyond redemption. Really, what I deserve is death, and they go off into isolation. Negative core beliefs about oneself and relationships. We talked about those earlier. Again, that's that I really believe that fundamentally there's something wrong with me, that because of how I was treated or cared for as a child, if I wasn't nurtured, if I wasn't loved, fundamentally children are egocentric. So they think I'm not loved because there's something wrong with me. You know, if Bobby grows up and he's in an alcoholic home, living in his alcoholic home, and mom and dad's a raging alcoholic and mom's a flaming enabler, but Bobby, Nocini lives down the street and her family's really nice and really loving. Bobby can't go pack his suitcases and go to mom and dad and say, mom, you're an enabler and a codependent and you're really, really unhealthy. And dad, you have a real bad problem with anger and alcoholism. But Sini's house is really, really nice. They love Christ and they really care for each other. So I'm going to go live with Sini and I'm going to go get cared for there. And if you all ever get your life together, I'll come back. But you're unhealthy for me, so I need to leave. Well, they can't do that. But they do have to restore homeostasis. So what the child inevitably decides is they're the mistake. It's something wrong with me. So they take on that shame and that blame. Again, in that system, there's normally unhealthy attachment. Those are things that are going on. And those are things, again, we get through them. We get through them, but they're always memories. My grandfather died when I was 10, and he served here in World War I. And as I'm walking around in France, that's who I'm thinking about. I miss him as much today as I do the day that he died. And that's just a memory. That's an ongoing susceptibility. We all have them. They're there. They're present. It's that at that stage. that there are these pivot points with these memories where now the pivot point with my grandfather is that I can walk through and think, wow, this is really wonderful. And the feelings of affection that I'm having for our little village here, I wonder if my grandfather had those. You know, I miss him. He'd probably be proud of me. That's a good pivot point. A negative pivot point is, you know, I'm mad that he's gone and da-da-da-da-da, and we can get angry and hostile. What happens is where we need to help our clients get, the folks that we're working with, is to pivot through it in a healthy way, to pivot through the child experience and work through it, not pivot to where they act out. So again, those core beliefs, again, I'm unworthy. If you really knew me, you wouldn't love me, and no one's going to care for my needs but me. That starts to create their whole operating system. That's what's functioning underneath the surface of them. It's underneath there. And ultimately, if we're really going to break and create transformation, that's ultimately what we need to deal with. Now, my approach isn't to spend 20 years in analysis with these folks. What I believe is that as we work through the other areas with them, we will help them resolve those issues. If I grew up in a shame-based home where I wasn't allowed to make mistakes and dad was a rager if I blew it, if I have right relationship with folks, if I'm in Hartmut's group and he says, well, you know what, when you feel like drinking or you feel like acting out, you need to call and you need to go see these people, and I go do that, and I tell them what I did, and they don't blow up and they don't scream and they don't rage, well, yeah, I'm doing a behavior, but what's going to happen underneath is the behavior is going to show me that, wait a minute, I can make mistakes and I can be loved and I can be cared for. So really what I try to do is focus folks on moving into a more solution-oriented approach. It's probably if we're going to have to define kind of what my orientation leans more towards, it's more solution-oriented. Yes, we move them towards solution while dealing with the inside issue, but we do move them towards the right behaviors, and these areas begin to get resolved. Now, we move from ongoing susceptibilities. A lot of times those core beliefs, those things can push us into unhealthy functioning in our life. So I help my clients start to understand what's going on in their functioning. Now, what I'll usually have them do is define for them, tell me what chaos looks like for you. What does your life look like? What's the chaos of your life? We start to define that. A great acronym for unhealthy functioning, HALT. Used in a lot of recovery circles, too hungry, too angry, too lonely, or too tired. And that's a really good acronym. Am I too hungry? Am I too angry? Am I too lonely? Or am I too tired? And if those areas are out of balance, chances are the rest of their life's out of balance. What we find in this stage is usually depression and anxiety begin to increase. That can be either physiological or just relational. I can be anxious because I have a physiological problem with dopamine and serotonin, or I can be anxious because I've overcommitted. I can be anxious because I can't say no to anybody, and I've said yes to 20 people, and I'm feeling overwhelmed, and it's going to be absolutely impossible for me to do everything that I need to do today. Therefore, I feel anxiety. So what begins to happen is those individuals have that anxiety underneath the surface. What I find with a lot of folks that I work with, though, is they're not even aware of that. If you ask them how they are, fine. I'm fine. Oh, okay, you're fine. So you're frustrated, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. Okay? They're fine. It's what's really going on underneath the surface. And again, a lot of times what will happen, especially folks who grow up in an unhealthy environment, is they learn to shut off their emotions. I worked with a guy whose dad was just a huge abuser and would get in and scream in their faces. He learned how to not have any emotional response at all. Because if you looked a little irritated, which when someone's in your face screaming, it's kind of irritating. But if you react, bam. So he learned how to really be fine all the time because he learned how not to even allow those emotions to come to the surface. Yet they were present and he found other ways to deal with them. Ongoing susceptibilities can become touched. You know, a lot of times we can be in an environment where we are living and operating in an unhealthy environment. Or we're going through a transition period. Things in our childhood experiences, memories, different events, conditions. You know, if you grew up in a chaotic home and lots of chaos went on, the rules changed all the time, things changed all the time. If that same individual now as an adult is in an environment where there's chaos, it may drive them a little bit crazy. And they may not really know why. So part of what I'll do is I say, well, let's draw a connector. And again, now not to blame and shame their childhood or go, oh gosh, you poor victim. It's saying, oh no, it makes sense. Oh, it makes sense that if you grew up in that kind of an environment and you felt crazy back then and you felt overwhelmed by it, that you're going to have an adverse reaction now. So your emotional reaction is normal. What are we going to do to work through your emotional reaction now? How do we help you work through that? So again, it's knowing that these things are present during this unhealthy functioning. What begins to happen, that anxiety is going to begin to increase, and I'm going to start to look for a way of relief. When I'm in that stage, I'm going to try to find a way to take care of it. Okay. Reason and sanity begin to decrease. These are folks that, you know, maybe it's us sometimes too, that we tend to not think real well. We're feeling overwhelmed. We have all these different things going on. You may sit with these people and all of a sudden they're feeling overwhelmed by everything that's going on around them. Their life seems chaotic. Everybody's going to be mad at me. All these things are going on. I have to do this. It has to be done right. I can't say no. What we start seeing is that you really see them not thinking and functioning clearly. They may shift to all or nothing thinking styles. If I do this, it's going to be great. If I don't, it's going to be awful. People either love me or they hate me. If I don't do this, awful things are going to happen. So really what they start to create is a really unhealthy black and white thinking style. Good old recovery term, stinking thinking. A pity pot is another term for it. We had a kid that I worked with when we worked with adolescents, he was perpetually on a pity pot. And so we had the pity pot award. And the kids that had the pity pot award, they had to carry this toilet seat lid. It was a clean one. I mean, it was new from the store. They had to carry a toilet seat lid around the ranch because they got the award for kind of the most pity pot. And pity's not being sad. Pity pot is being stuck in helplessness. This is me against the world. Everything's not going right. These people on my team are awful. I'm the only one who does anything. When we identify that to me is an indicator that something's not functioning right. For me, if stuff's not going right, I go, whoa, wait a minute. There's something else going on here. So what I do is I have folks define for them what's their unhealthy functioning. What does their halt look like? What does their chaos look like? How do you know when things aren't going right? When things aren't going right for me is when more mornings than not, I don't get my right quiet time. And my quiet times, you know, short time with the Lord, then I do, you know, I do 30 minutes of cardio. I usually do a light workout. It's just some private time, just kind of for me in the morning to keep my sanity. If more mornings than not, I'm having to use it to do emails, do other stuff, do other things, that's an indicator that my life's not functioning right.
Well, we still have more to learn about the stages that bring people like you and me to the possibilities of addictions and dependencies, and how this affects cross-cultural Christian workers. And next week, we'll pick up from where we left off today.